Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan again. Episode number 398, recorded July 16th, 2023.
And today we're doing the same series, two issues of the same series, because Ken doesn't like it. I'm going to throw you under the bus right from the beginning. We're doing Dog of War, issues 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because Ken said, let's just get them all out of the way as fast as possible. So that's why we're doing a double episode.
Actually, what Ken said is, instead of mixing them up, if we actually do two issues back to back, I mean, we have more of a continuous flow. It's more like Netflix binging.
Is that what you said?
I don't think I said Netflix binging. But basically, I think it's better that we have the two stories together. Right. Did I actually say we'll get it done faster?
I think so.
Okay, so especially after these last two issues, let me just say that it's fine. It's a fine series. There's too much of focus on the stupid dog. I love dogs. I've owned dogs. I've got a dog. Love the dog. But I think they're just going a little overboard with the focus on Latte.
Yeah, these guys love this dog.
The entire crew loves the heck out of this dog. And that's fine. It's just that I think you're going a little far. This is not an episode of Lassie.
And we see that the holodeck can make perfectly accurate dogs. So why they're going gaga over the real dog versus.
But it's not real.
The fake dog.
It's not real love. The real unconditional love that a dog can give you.
I guess.
Who rescued who? Anyway.
From the well?
Jimmy fell down the well.
I did watch a Watch Mojo or Miss Mojo, one of those ones.
Okay.
And they were talking about TV shows that people misremember. And okay. Lassie was on there saying that at no point does Lassie ever bark. And at no point to get Timmy out of a well. So like Timmy never falls in a well in the whole series. And yeah, that's what everybody latches on to.
Oh, that's great.
And then number one, of course, was nobody ever says beam me up, Scotty, throughout the whole tenure of Star Trek. So it was kind of cool that that was number one. The Lassie thing, my whole life, Timmy fell out of the well. That was what I was about. Well, so it was a little interesting to find out that truly never happened.
I am older than you. So when I was a kid, I actually used to watch that show. And no, I do not remember Timmy ever going into a well. However, there were plenty of situations where various people were in danger and Lassie was able to get help or solve the problem all by herself. I'm not surprised that Timmy never fell down a well, but good to know. Good to know.
Exactly. My life's better for knowing it, and now your life for listening to this is better.
Because many people listening.
Exactly. Okay. But we're not here to talk about Lassie. We're here to talk about Star Trek Dogs of War.
And Latte.
Latte.
L-A-T-T-Y, not L-A-D-D-Y. Latinum, if you want to pronounce the full name. So,
well, shall we get into issue 4 or 3?
We might as well.
Let's do it.
Continue. I will say that, you know, there's some very good, cool artistry going on here, and there are some interesting story points. It just, every time it comes back to the stupid dog, it's just a little bit overdone. Anyway.
Ouch.
And again, I like dogs. Okay. Issue number 3. Published date, June 2023. Creative team, writer Mike Chen. Artist, Angel Hernandez. Colorist, Nick Filardi. Letters and design by Neil Yutaki. Senior editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assist by Vanessa Rial. Got a lot of covers, six covers, like usual. And the first one reminded me, I mean, it almost seemed like an homage to the story of Achilles, you know, climbing the mountain to his destiny with his pet Targ in his backpack. Except in this cover, we've got the Targ is replaced by the Dog of War. And you can't really see the hooded figure fully. So when I first went into this this book and just saw the cover, is like, well, is that kind of looks like a Klingon. Is that supposed to be a Klingon? I wasn't sure. But it really is one of the mercenaries who we saw, you know, in the raiding party. Anyway, Dog of War, there he is. He's kind of like a cute Targ. Cover B features Vic Fontaine belting out a tune with the Dog of War providing accompaniment on a baby grand piano. Yes, that's going too far. Anyway, covers by Adrian Banila. Cover C features Jazia Dax with her arm around Worf's neck while he glowers at a Dalmatian with a duck tag in his mouth. Next to the Dalmatian is a bulldog with his tongue hanging out as if he is getting ready to give a big sloppy kiss to the Dalmatian or maybe the Doc Tog. I really don't know. Covers by Andy Price. Cover R1A presents a black and white version of cover A, and again by Angel Hernandez. Cover B presents what looks somewhat like a colorful child's drawing, with Quark and Odo looking upward to over nine dogs somehow floating in the air. Maybe the gravity was turned off. I don't know. The Dog of War is in the center with Borg implants, kind of similar to Seven of Nine. And then all the other dogs, I think, yeah, they just look like normal dogs that are floating around. Covers by Liana Kangas. Cover R1C is the same as R1B, except, you know, they dropped all the logo stuff. So it's a naked cover, a virgin cover, whatever they call these things in the biz.
Virgin cover, yep.
Virgin cover, there you go. And of course, that's the same artist. Quark is looking out at a large oval glass window of the station into space with Latinum by his side. He tells Latinum he is merchandise and successful Ferengi do not let themselves become attached to the merchandise. Merchandise is for profit only. And a Ferengi with no profit is no Ferengi at all. As Quark continues taking Laddie for his walk, he says the animal researcher could be totally wrong about the buyer wanting to kill Laddie and have a taxidermist stuff him for posterity. Quark enters a holodeck to continue the walk, only to find most of the command staff and some holodeck dogs and Vic are all there to throw Laddie a going-away party. Of course they would. I mean, there's a lot of people here, and they've been waiting around for Quark to show up. Everyone makes a huge deal about the dog and even asks Quark if they might be able to visit Laddie in his new home. Quark does not say a word about Laddie's likely demise and eventually can't take it anymore and leaves with Laddie. Odo looks at Quark as he departs unexpectedly and can tell something is wrong with Quark. When Quark reaches a back storeroom, he grabs a pad and tries to contact the buyer. The faceless man, hidden in shadow, opens the channel. Quark tries to delay the merchandise pickup, and immediately the buyer asks about the Borg device. Thinking the device is unimportant, Quark tells the buyer it was confiscated by Starfleet and tries to get back to the dog. On hearing Starfleet has the Borg device, the buyer kills the connection. Quark takes that as an A-OK on the delay to pick up Laddie for a few days, so he goes back to the holosuite and tells Vic he can continue to take care of Laddie overnight. Later, Quark is awakened from an odd dream with Cardassian and multiple dogs by the sound of station alarms. He runs into the hall to see at least five security personnel running down the hall. One of them is Nog, who tells Quark something triggered a Cardassian security lockdown in Pylon 2. As Nog continues to catch up with his team, he tells Quark the promenade is vulnerable as well. Quark runs back to the holosuite to find it deactivated. Quark starts it back up, and Vic tells him three armed aliens shut the suite down and took Laddie. Vic says they need to call Odo since he has information about some nasty deeds. They go to Odo and Sisko to tell them what happened and show the images of the perps Vic took before he was shut down. Odo and Sisko know something big is going on because they took the Borg device as well as Laddie. Also, Garak took one look at the image Vic captured and identified one of the perps as an ex-Obsidian Order operative who likely knew how to trigger the Pylon 2 alarms to act as a distraction. Bashir hails Sisko and tells him the tracking device he put on Laddie days ago is working and he knows where the dognappers are. The tracker signal is not perfect, but it tells them Laddie and the perps are in Pylon 2 near Defiant. Worf is on it and grabs a phaser rifle. Worf finds a tuft of blonde hair that looks like it's from Laddie. Two detonators are thrown at Worf, who ducks behind some heavy machinery. They follow up the detonators with directed energy weapons fire. Worf is pinned down long enough for the perps to beam away with Laddie. Later, Quark is with Sisko telling him about the animal rescue zealot. Sisko tells him to contact that person and try to see what he knows. Quark does so, and they find out that the animal zealot is actually an attractive young woman with sassy dark hair. She goes on and on about her group's activities protecting animals in situations Starfleet is not interested in dealing with. She tells them Quark has been dealing with the brokers on the black market, who are a consortium that will buy and sell anything, no matter the item's risk. She suggests that maybe their interests are overlapping in this case, and they might want to work together. Sisko is interested, especially in retrieving the Borg device. Later, Sisko is briefing his command staff, including the new realization that the Borg device is also a spy device. The brokers planted that on the station with Quark so that it could access and steal all the information possible from the DS9 mainframe. That is why they wanted to retrieve it so badly, that they risked a raid on the station. Jadzia comes up with the idea that they need to get closer to the location of the brokers by having Quark contact them, and once the channel is open, they can trace it. Quark does so and keeps the channel open longer by getting the buyer to put Laddie on the view screen. But before the buyer lost his patience and closed the channel, Jadzia was able to trace their location. Later, Captain Sisko is speaking with Admiral Ross, who says he is assigning Captain Krishna and the USS Normandy to go to the location and arrest the brokers. They will retrieve the Borg device and erase the stolen Federation data, and they will confiscate any other stolen booty they find. Sisko talks the Admiral into letting him and his team carry out the assault. Once they retrieve the Borg device, Sisko can use it to see if the information thieves have anything of interest to the war effort. The Admiral lets Sisko have his way, and before long, the Defiant departs DS9 with most of the command officers to carry out a dangerous assault that could see many of them wounded or even dead. To be continued.
All for the dog.
Well, the dog and the device.
Right.
But, yeah, a lot of the dog.
Yeah.
Not that Sisko mentions the dog. I don't think he mentions the dog.
Well, that's what he's thinking.
But that's what he's thinking. That's what his heart is saying, Donovan. His heart is saying, I must save Laddie.
And he flat out says it in the next issue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to everybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This one was, pretty heavy into explaining everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the next issue is a little lighter in actually doing something. So the story seems to flow a lot faster than this one did.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Well, at first I liked seeing Worf, with the phaser rifle, going after the guys, Worf in action.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave a little bit of action stuff going on. But in the end, and it was very well drawn, but in the end, Worf can't do anything anyway. So right. He's he's outnumbered, pinned down, detonators thrown, blah, 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 and they get away. So at least there was a little bit of action there. But yeah, the rest of it, a lot of the rest of it is setting things up and talk, a lot of talk.
A lot of talk, which Star Trek's known for talking heads, just sitting there talking. So.
Well, and that's what's good about it.
Yep. Now, if anything, the... And it's kind of spoiling a little bit of the next issue. My number one complaint with the whole tracking down Laddie thing is this idea of everybody following these little tufts of red blonde hair. His dog doesn't shed that much.
I know. Is this dog bald by this point?
So I'm like, so the, you know, the Hansel and Gretel thing is getting, or was it Hansel and Gretel that left the little trail of breadcrumbs? I don't know. Whatever the
trail of bread. Yeah, definitely right. the trail of bread crumb.
It's just like, oh my goodness. Worf's tracking down these little trails of hair. And then in the next issue, they do the same thing. It's just
it gets worse than the next one.
It gets so much worse than the next one. But I'm like, I don't like the tracking down the hair thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know dogs shed. I've had dogs, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But not like
giant clumps. Like, Worf's picking up a sizable clump, and he's just like, oh, this is Laddie's. It's like, dude, that dog is bald.
And then I'm wondering,
is the dog doing it on purpose? Is this, like, his way of leaving a trail? Like, somehow he controls his shedding?
Yeah, well, in the end, he seems like he's a normal dog, so no.
Yes, yes. Okay, we say that. All right, I want to talk about something that's been kind of on my mind. We keep saying he's a normal dog.
Okay.
But
do we? I know I just said it, but
I know, but I mean, he is a normal dog, and all in the story, he's just a dog. But on the covers, they always depict him as with Borg implants or something like that. So it's just like, is that going to be a big reveal in the last issue? I mean, because we only got one more issue left. Right. And up until the end of the next issue, he's a dog.
Yeah,
but all the covers kind of depict that he's something more than a dog. So I'm wondering, is that going to be like a big reveal? And if it is, I'm going to be like, well, you've telegraphed it on every cover for the last, you know, five issues. It's not that big of a surprise if that's what they do.
To that, I will say that I think Bashir's scans of him would have probably turned up any hardware that was in him. But who knows? Maybe not. Also, why do these mercenaries want the stinking dog? I mean, they want the device and the data that's on the device. I mean, are they really going to make that much if they really do sell it to somebody to stuff them in taxidermy or something?
Right.
It's like, really? They're going to all this trouble to grab the dog? I would have thought that they would have spent all their time grabbing the Borg device with all the Federation secrets in it, as far as the war effort, and then they would get the heck out of there. They wouldn't bother going to a totally separate location to grab Laddie. Out of a hollow suite.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so maybe there is something more to the dog. But I'm kind of surprised nothing came up in Bashir's medical scans when he checked it out.
Well, he probably got distracted. He's like, it has a wet nose. Oh,
nah.
I'm not going to look at the scan.
Uh-huh, okay.
So what do you think of the aliens? I liked them. I don't know what they are.
Oh, the mercenary guys?
Yeah.
They look great. I think it's good design.
Yeah, I like the one in the green cloak. I mean, he looks menacing. You don't know what species he is. And then I don't know what the species of the other two, but they look cool.
Well, one of them is supposed to be a Cardassian.
Well, that's so the one.
Is that the guy in the hood?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the guy in the hood. Okay. Well, who is the main? He's like the main mercenary leader, bad guy, whatever. They seem to focus on him a lot in the panels.
And he was the main cover, you know, with Laddie on his back.
Exactly. He's the one with Laddie on his back, right? Because it's going to turn out that Laddie is his dog. He wants his dog back. You know, kind of like the Klingon captain in Star Trek 3.
Reverend Jem's dog?
His targ. Exactly. I don't know. I just don't know why. Well, whatever. Doesn't matter. But I do like, towards the end, they've got a shot of Sisko and then all the command staff you know, marching to the Defiant. You know, some of them are holding rifles and everything. It's like, are you expecting to fight somebody right here in the station on your way to Defiant? I don't know. But it, I mean, you know, it's cool and everything. It's one of those things where, like, the perspective of the reader is like you're kind of below looking up to them. So it's like, oh my God, it's the Magnificent Seven. All right, great.
Exactly. If this was filmed, it would be in slow-mo.
Exactly. Right. So that's cool. And yeah, stuff.
So you,
but
you
really,
brought up a good point. Who's even
who's
on the
left?
Ship? Who's on the station?
Exactly.
It's still during the Dominion War, so they're leaving it completely naked. Completely.
Okay, so Odo's still there, right?
Okay. Odo, but he's not Starfleet.
But he's not Starfleet. He's a constable. He's not going to, you know, direct the counteroffensive when the Dominion makes another attack. Quark, okay. Garak? Well, definitely not. I mean, he'd know how to do things, but
right. Come
on. He's just a simple tailor. Morn? I don't think so.
Nah, it'll just be a bunch of red shirts. Yeah, so Deep Space Nine is toast.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's funny. But it's a very Star Trek thing to do. Just beam down your main crew down to the alien planet.
Put them all at risk.
Makes good TV.
Another thing is, I always like the Makos in Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea of having the Explorers, you know, the typical Starfleet crew, you know, sure, they got some security people, you know, whatever. But they're not SWAT. I mean, they're not special forces, you know, to do these kind of things. And the idea of actually having the Makos around made a lot of sense when you know you were going to go into a... you know, a military battle situation.
Really good.
But this is like, okay, these are just normal Starfleet folks. They're not specialists per se. Although obviously, you know, you got Worf there. And of course, we'll find out what he does in the next issue on the assault team. Anyway, it just strikes me how these Starfleet guys are all purpose. They got to have something in this modern age, although we never see them, I don't think, that are like the Makos. Those are the kind of people you should send in.
Right, which totally makes sense. You need to have a SWAT team.
Right. And of course, as usual, when they go into these things, well, we'll see in the next issue. They don't have special gear, right? I mean, they don't have tactical vests or anything. They're just wearing their normal uniforms. Okay. Well, at least that's something that Discovery did a bit of, which makes more sense. At least they're having some kind of a tactical vest or something they're wearing.
Right. Anyway. Right. Okay. Well, in the very first pilot, Cage, they had away mission jackets, and then we never see it again.
Yeah, but that's just to keep you warm. They had some kind of slings for their equipment,
right?
You know, under their coat, but that was more to keep you warm.
I don't remember being cold there.
I don't know. But those are pretty cool. I like those blue coats,
right?
Those away mission coats. I like those. Anyway, what do you think?
I think the artwork's great again. I thought I really enjoyed everything. You?
Mm-hmm. Definitely has that. Very good.
Yeah, it has that comic book feel, which I really like. You know, with a lot of, if somebody's thinking of something, the background suddenly changes to whatever they're thinking about. You know, which is a trope in comic books that you don't get in TV shows and stuff. So I kind of like how they're leaning into that versus just, you know, a square with a talking head like a lot of IDW does, where it kind of looks more like a TV show than a comic book.
Right. Oh, cool. That's a good point. Speaking of the artwork, there is one panel where they're in a briefing or something, or they're doing something, and they look at a display, and they're showing all the different mercenaries' booty.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in the middle of the booty is our little Latty. So that's cute. But I'm more interested in all the other stuff shown.
Yeah, I don't know what some of it is, but I was going to mention it too.
Well, let's talk about them, shall we?
Sure.
Okay, so the first thing that I am perplexed about is a alternate JJ-verse phaser. What's that doing there?
That's a JJ-verse one?
Yeah. So that is straight out of the 2009 movie.
It has the little flip around thing for stun.
A little flippy thing, yes.
Mm.
Stun versus kill. So on the left, that's the first thing that catches my eye and makes me scratch my head. What the heck is that doing there?
Well,
I mean, it's a cool looking phaser, but what's it doing there?
Well, if it somehow moved from dimensions, that you could see why the collector would want it.
Oh,
it's a trans-dimensional phaser. It somehow came in through the rift.
I will agree with you that there would be a reason to care about that, but have we ever seen any dimension hopping in Star Trek proper? Or okay, so we've seen a little bit of stuff in the comic books, but really, well, those were one-off stories.
David Cronenberg in Discovery said that there was a guy that came from the alternate universe into...
Of course, that's in the year 3000 or whatever.
Yeah, but the event happened during Star Trek The Next Generation timeline because he was wearing a Season 1 uniform.
Okay.
So, then if it happened during the Season 1 of Next Generation, could... Maybe that's when this phaser came into this universe.
That's an incredibly long shot explanation, but sure. Is that what they're trying to say?
Yeah, with that one panel that nobody else.
I know you're kind of pulling this out of your butt, but still.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Well, at least you have an explanation, if however unlikely. Okay, so that's that one. There's a Doc Tog. Okay, mm-hmm. A Doc Tog. And so this is supposed to be stuff that they're buying and selling on the black market. It's a knife. It's a Klingon knife. Really? Who cares? Anyway. And then they've got Uhura's earpiece.
Yeah, the earpiece time frame. That was funny, yeah.
I mean, that's like 100 years. That's equipment from 100 years ago. I mean, I guess if you're a collector, it might make a difference. But you're not going to use that thing.
And what about the dentist chair or whatever that recliner is?
Great question. What the heck is a dentist chair doing? We don't know it's a dentist chair. But it's a reclining chair, kind of like a dentist chair. What is this, an IKEA? What's so special about that chair that mercenaries on the black market are going to... What?
Yeah. And I like to pretend like that little black perfume bottle thing next to the earpiece.
Right.
I like that's a bottle of Black Panther. Or no, not Black Panther. Sex Panther from Ron Burgundy.
Oh my God.
70% of the time, it works every time.
That's funny. The first thing that came to my mind was the black goo from the Alien franchise.
Oh. I thought maybe you're talking about the black goo that killed Tasha in Skin of Evil.
No. Although, I was thinking of the black goo from...
Alien.
Alien that somehow the engineers were using for something and whatever. And David weaponized or whatever he did to kill all those people.
I really don't like the last two Alien movies, and I'm a huge Alien fan.
Well, the thing, they didn't explain a doggone thing. Mm-hmm. And they expect you to be able to figure out all this stuff.
Or not care about it enough to ask. Yeah.
And that's great. That's, you know, it's like 2001 A Space Odyssey. They didn't explain everything in the movie that was explained in the book.
Sure.
But it's like, if you're going to do this kind of thing and introduce the black goo and it's doing all these amazing things, it's like... And then there are a lot of other things, aspects of those last films that just are not explained at all. And there's no way to get an explanation. I mean, this wasn't part of a novel or something.
Right.
Although if you do read some of the comic books, mm-hmm. some of the comic books do give you a lot more information about the black goo and what's going on.
Exactly.
But how many people are going to do that are moviegoers?
Yeah. And I did enjoy the comics that had the Prometheus, Alien, mm-hmm. Predator, crossovers mm-hmm. and stuff. Those were really
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, back to this. So they've got a TAWS engineering, at least I think it's an engineering diagnostic tool or something like that. I think Scotty was using this.
Three fingers thing, yeah.
Exactly. So again, something from 100 years ago. So, okay. Who would want that?
And then that little thing with the speaker, is that just like a communicator of some sort?
It looks like a communicator to me, but I really don't know.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I didn't look it up. I didn't try to look it up.
Right.
But it looks like a communicator. But it could be more.
Right. Could be an alien tricorder. Who knows? It looked familiar enough that I didn't question it, but it didn't jump out at me at what it was, and I didn't go look it up.
Right.
And then the little desk ornament.
It definitely looks like something I would see on a desk,
but it didn't jump out at me at where I've seen it before.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that had to appear somewhere in the Star Trek universe. But where exactly? Whose desk? I have no idea. But that had to show up somewhere in the past.
Right. Yeah, like I said, it looked kind of familiar, but I did not know where. And I didn't bother to look it up because I don't think you're supposed to nitpick everything.
Well, these are Easter eggs. I mean, I think from the story standpoint, they had to have something here. But I think the people that put them in here for a reason.
Absolutely.
But like kind of like Easter egg kind of things. Sure. So I got to say, I'm scratching my head on the sofa. And why they have all this TOS stuff. That would be of value. I mean, we like it because it's fan service. But how is that a value to mercenaries? Anyway.
Right. Now, is this pictures of what it looks like now? Or looks like are these pictures from before when they sent it to court? Because if so, why does Laddie have the necklace on, the Starfleet collar?
Good question. Who knows?
And when they stole Laddie, why did they take the uniform off but left the collar on? I know it's
no idea. We
track it, but story-wise, why did they do that? They took off the little vest.
They're not worried about that. They're not worried about that.
worried about the vest.
The little Starfleet swoosh. Okay? So does he... I mean, I've seen it like on covers and things. He had a little, you know, Starfleet swoosh thing on his collar, like instead of his ID collar. Mm-hmm. So I know I've seen that on like covers and things, but did we actually see in the story him getting that? I know he had the vest thing from
I think he got it for him. Yeah, right.
He got it with the vest. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And I'm assuming that's what Bashir's tracking.
Which would kind of make sense. Because comm badges are tracking devices also.
Which, again, drives home, why did the mercenaries take the vest off but leave the collar?
I don't know. I don't know. Convenience? Story needed that to happen.
Story needed it to happen.
I have one last thing to say.
All right, go for it.
When Quark comes into the Holo Suite... And then they've got 15 jillion people there waiting to give a stupid dog a going away party. Mm-hmm. Vic Fontaine is off to the left, and he's got a camera from like
the 1890. Yep.
Exactly, right. And in his right hand, holding up in the sky, he's got that little metal trough thing that they like fill with gunpowder or something.
Exactly. You know,
to flash. And give more light when they actually open up, you know, when they lift up the piece of wood in the back or something that exposes the plate to light. Why the heck is he using such an, oh my God, useless device?
The same way we here in the 21st century just mix up things from the past. Like, oh yeah, the Civil War, they had the muskets that you had the big cone at the top, at the end, where you're mixing up pilgrims and world pilgrims. Civil War soldiers.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I'm just giving it that because, yeah, you're right. It's like, should be 60 years apart. They were not using those kind of cameras when Vic Fontaine was supposedly there.
So if this is something Vic is used to using, give him a Canon SLR. You know, a Pentax, you know, Sony, something. But that? Oh, my God. Anyway.
So Vic is supposed to be from, like, the 60s, right?
Well, Vic is supposed to be Frank Sinatra. Okay. So yeah, right, 50s, 60s. Of course, with the gray hair and everything. Although, did he have gray hair?
Who?
In the show?
Yeah, I don't know.
But not the actor.
Oh yeah. He did.
Did he have gray hair? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but they originally tried to get Frank Sinatra Jr. to play that role. And because Frank Sinatra Jr. was a fan of the show and actually said he wanted to be on the show, but he wanted to be an alien. And they said, no, we got something else in mind, you know, and we want you to be this, you know, we want you to basically be your father. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. Yeah. So then they got Jimmy Darren or whatever his name is.
Yeah, that's his name. I was trying to remember.
Right. Who was in, I think, the time tunnel. Wasn't he in the time tunnel?
Was he? I don't know.
I think. Anyway, whatever.
I know that we played his album at my wedding.
Oh, okay, there's James Darren, who's different. Oh, well, hold on a second. The actor that played Vic Fontaine actually has an album?
He does, yeah.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me. And of course you would have that.
Of course I would. We had to have Vic Fontaine represented.
Oh, my gosh. So what song from Vic's repertoire did you guys play?
I really don't remember.
Or did you play the whole thing?
No, we just played. I think we just picked a song or two. It was like a cover of a classic song.
Sure. But done by Vic Fontaine.
Exactly. In our head, it was Vic Fontaine.
Okay. Oh, that's funny. That's great.
It was funny.
Okay. All right. That's
anything else? That's it.
That's it.
All right. Let's jump into issue 4. So the writing staff and everything is exactly the same. This came out cover date of July 2023. Several covers. The first cover, cover A by Angel Hernandez and colors by Nick Filardi. And it shows Cisco wearing the Borg helmet and he's like screaming at the reader. And it's just like a very, very close up of his face and he looks to be in pain. Cover B is by Mally Warr, and it shows Jadzia holding little Laddie, and Laddie's giving her a lick on the face, and Kira's sitting behind her, and they're having like a little picnic. Cover C is by Andy Price, and this is like the panoramic one where we've now showing O'Brien and Bashir, each with a dog counterpart. It looks like Bashir's holding a little Chihuahua, and O'Brien has, I'm assuming it's some sort of Irish dog, but looks kind of like a big poodle, a brown poodle of some sort. And then we have the retail incentive cover, which is the cover A, but in black and white. We have another retail incentive cover by Stefano Simone, and it's all pink, very pink, and it shows, I guess it's Bashir and Cisco, like climbing up or reactor or something, and then we see the dog there. Not quite sure if they're climbing it up or climbing down or falling. I don't know. It's very unclear. And then there's another retail incentive cover, same one as that one, but the Virgin cover without any of the logos. The story starts with the crew on their covert mission to retrieve the Borg tech and also the dog Laddie from the mercenaries and collectors. They flush out their plan over several pages, and it's to get close to the ship, flash their cloaking device to get the collector's attention. And then when the mercenary ship gets close enough to the asteroid belt to investigate, they're going to shoot some asteroid fragments at the ship, knock down its shields, and then beam over a landing party. Coincidentally, the plan goes exactly as planned. So after we spend 4 pages hearing about it, we see another couple pages of them actually doing it. Everything works out fine. The landing party's beamed over, and it consists of Kira, Jadzia, Bashir, and Cisco. Once they're in like a little storeroom of some sort, a Cardassian comes in, and Kira pummels him good. It does look like it might have been the same Cardassian that was wearing the green hood from the previous issue. And then they follow little tufts of dog hair into a ventilation system, and they climb in and go through it Die Hard style. They split up, and Kira and Dax go for the Borg headpiece. They're going to switch it out with a mock-up. And they find it in a room that's very similar to the situation in Mission Impossible 1, where it's in a high-tech security room with lots of, you know, pressure floors and lasers everywhere. So they're able to knock down the devices for about 6 seconds. And in that 6 seconds, that Dax has to use her previous lives ballerina powers to hop around and switch out the headpieces. So they knock it out, and she does indeed get through the obstacle course and back up into the ventilation shaft, making Tom Cruise proud of our favorite trill. However, one of these little tufts of hair that they've been following falls from the ventilation shaft into the floor, which then triggers the alarm. So it was all for nothing. So the two women meet back up with Sisko and Bashir. Sisko uses the device to hack into the ship, and he helps guide the girls to Laddie's location. He also uses the power to erase all of the evidence of the device in the ship system and also anyone that it transmitted data to. The girls are able to find Laddie, and as they're trying to get him out of his little cage, a firefight ensues with the mercenaries. And then there's a fire that gets started, and it looks like Laddie might get burned up while he's still in the little cage, and the girls themselves might get cooked with oncoming blaster fire. Meanwhile, Sisko strains himself to try to pull back and erase all the data that was transmitted out from the ship. Now he knows that the data was being transmitted to a Dominion fleet. And then we get a shot of this giant fleet of Dominion ships. To be continued.
Exciting. Action-packed.
Poor dog. Losing all that hair.
You know, I don't know, but there's this one shot with Kira going through the, I think through the ducts, which are huge.
Yeah.
And she comes across one thick tuft of hair, which is about the size of an arm. Like a forearm. It's about the size of a forearm. You tell me that came off of that little dog. I don't know. Yeah. I'm sure it's a question of perspective. Where, you know, where the tuft is further towards the me, the viewer, and she, and Kira's further back. So
right.
That it's probably something like that. But looking at it, it looks like it's the size of her arm.
And it's all over. It's on the ceiling. It's on the floor. It's mm-hmm. on the sides of these huge air ducts. I mean, it's ridiculous. It looks like little tribbles everywhere.
Yeah. So long since Laddie probably wasn't running around in the air conditioning ducts, so what they're saying is that the ventilation system sucked this off of the ground and put it into the vents?
Yeah, and deposited it throughout the vents, yeah. Okay, and, right. They do say that the ventilation shaft's bigger than normal because they have all this stolen tech that generates mm-hmm. heat, and they needed to cool it off.
Well, at least they tried to explain that.
Yeah, but still, it's gigantic. And let's be honest, if there's that much hair in your ventilation system, some of it's already going to be falling out onto these laser grid floors and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So
yeah.
The fact that a tuft of hair came out and set off the alarm, I find that a little hard to believe if there was that much hair already in the air system to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, it's just too much. And then what did you think about the whole Mission Impossible recreation?
Jadzia was channeling the abilities of a prior host that was a gymnast.
Not a ballerina. You're right.
Not a ballerina. I did say ballerina earlier. Just to mention that.
Well, they do show a picture of her, and she's doing like this ballerina dance thing. That's what made me say ballerina. But you're right. She does say gymnast, an Olympic gymnast.
Right. And her outfit, she doesn't have a tutu, so she's got more of a one-piece gymnast thing. But yeah, whatever. I thought it was fine. Whatever. It's cute.
It's so silly.
Well, okay, yes.
I mean,
but at least they didn't have the ropes coming down.
That's
you
true.
Know, where they've got the whole rig, letting her down slowly. Yeah.
Right. It's just that, so she's jumping down at the same time Kira's throwing the fake one. And Dax is able to dance around all these little pillars, grab the fake one, switch it out with the real one, and jump all back up there in 6 seconds.
Right. So the big thing was O'Brien was able to short the system or something. Exactly. But it would come back online pretty quickly. So she didn't have much time to get back out again before the systems came back online.
Yeah. I just say BS.
Whatever. Yes. Well, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
It did have one great line where Jadzia kind of thinks to herself and she says, what was her name? Amani. She's like, Amani, I hope you really were as good a gymnast as you think you were, or something like that. And she jumps down there. So that was at least a little funny that she had some self-doubt.
You better not have been exaggerating those memories. Yes. That's a good point.
There's one thing to know how to do it. It's another thing to have the muscle memory and things to actually do it. So.
Oh, and to be in shape enough to do it. I mean, obviously, everybody's in good shape that's in the crew, but a gymnast? I mean, an Olympic gymnast is at a level of being in shape far beyond almost everybody.
Right.
So, but.
I mean, she does practice with Worf a lot, so.
True. Different set of muscles, though.
Exactly. Maybe. You would think so.
Maybe. Okay, so just so I have this straight. At the end, what they're saying is Sisko was able to erase all the stolen data from the mercenary ship's databanks, but it was in the middle of transmitting that data to the Dominion fleet. Is that right?
Exactly. I had to read it a couple of times, but that was what I got out of it, too.
Okay.
And that he's now somehow trying to recall it in some way using Borg tech, which doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. We have no idea how 24th century FTP works, but today, file transfer protocol, I'm pretty sure if you don't send the entire file, then what you do get is typically pretty useless. But who knows how this stuff works? And who knows how much they were able to transmit?
Right.
Anyway, so it should be interesting to see how they're going to resolve this in the next issue.
Right. And it's definitely going to get resolved in the next issue.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Last issue.
So has your opinion of the series itself improved from the last two issues?
No, not really.
No?
Although, no, not really. Now, this was a nice issue from the standpoint that there's lots of action going on. Even if some of it was a little bit derivative and like hard to believe, like your whole thing about the whole Mission Impossible burglary thing, getting the device. Mm-hmm. I like this issue better than a lot of the issues, especially the early ones.
And it definitely ended on a cliffhanger. I mean, so we don't know who all is going to get killed. Right.
And the stakes are very high.
Right.
So as soon as they started saying, oh, mercenaries could be getting all the war secrets that DS9 had in his memory banks over to the Dominion. Well, those are pretty big stakes. So it makes it more relevant than just a dog lover. here's five issues for all the dog lovers. Oh, great. Okay. It's a little bit more interesting now. Yes, yeah. I do agree. And of course, you go on a mission like this, and you leave Worf on the ship.
Right.
Now, in the end, it turned out that's a good thing he was on the ship, but still.
So why is it a good thing he's on the ship? I mean, he doesn't do anything.
At the end, Worf is on the ship and a poop load of Jem'Hadar ships.
All right, so.
Come out.
Are they there, though? Because I reread this several times to try to figure out what exactly that last panel is. And the Defiant's not in there, so I don't think that's. I don't think they're being surrounded by the Dominion. I think it's just saying the Dominion out in the wilds now has this data.
Oh, okay. So in actuality, that whole big fleet is many, many light years away from their position.
I'm assuming, yes. I'm assuming. And maybe it means like they're just about to storm Deep Space Nine now that it doesn't have any Starfleet personnel there or something. But yeah, when I first read it, I thought the same thing you did. I was like, oh, they're all surrounding the Defiant. And then when I was doing the synopsis, I was like really looking in there, and I'm like, no, the Defiant's not there at all. So I don't. I just think it's somewhere out in the vast.
Okay.
Vastness.
Okay, fine. So you're right. So looking back at this, basically, I think Major Kira should have been back, left back with the ship, and Worf should have gone into harm's way with everybody else. Because in a lot of ways, it seems to me that Major Kira is doing some of the stuff on the assault team that you would see Worf doing.
Right.
So
punching out Cardassians.
I mean, big time. And actually, the way they drew that was pretty cool.
Right.
I mean, Kira is on this guy, you know, pinning him to the floor, you know, with her whole weight, which is not that much. She's not that big a lady. And she's just pulling her fist back and going to knock this guy's block off.
Right.
And that looks pretty cool. I mean, she looks pretty bad butt.
And she's wailing on him with both arms. So as soon as one arm makes contact to his face, the other arm's already up, ready to go again.
Right. So that's great. That's pretty cool. They gave Kira a chance to do something like that. But wouldn't that be more the kind of thing you'd expect Worf to be doing?
Yeah, but I did like when they're like, whoa, 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 that's a little much. And she's like, oh, I think I might have recognized him or something like that. Like she remembers him from when she was
enslaved
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the occupation of
But she never says she did recognize him. She said, I might have. So I think it's just an excuse to wail on some Cardassians.
Well, he was a member of the Obsidian Order, so.
That's true.
Very possible. That's how she knew him. So, yeah, I guess that's a good thing. So she has perhaps she has a personal connection with this particular guy. Or at least, maybe not personal, but she knows of him.
Right. But she seemed a lot closer to Laddie, though, than Worf, so it makes more sense that she's there.
I certainly hope so. Jeez. Between Odo and Worf, those are the two guys that should be like, what the heck is all this with the dog? Anyway. So what do you think about the looks of that mercenary ship?
Looks like a big Tylenol, right? Let me go back.
It looks like a big Tylenol.
I didn't think much of it. Why?
I didn't think that much of it either. But, you know, kind of look at the general shape of it. It kind of reminded me of, like, if the Defiant, like, let itself go to pot.
Exactly. Yeah, the big-ass body.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly. So it's got the front part, right? Of course, the front part of this mercenary ship probably that's probably where the bridge is and a lot of other stuff, as opposed to whatever the front of the Defiant is. Supposedly it's some kind of warhead. I don't know. But and then it goes back into the main part of the ship. And then the nacelles are pretty close to the body, not integrated into the body like the Defiant has, but close. It just, at first I thought, oh my God, what a, you know, big bulky ship. But then it's like, oh, it's a little bit like Defiant. Anyway.
But I'll be honest, I didn't really care for their little plan to get onto the ship.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what was shooting the asteroid bits out of the torpedo tubes better than just shooting it with torpedoes?
Well, okay, so those bits of asteroid also had shield disruptors on them. So they actually there were electronic devices in or on or whatever.
Yeah, attached. It shows them putting it on there, yeah.
Right.
But still, a torpedo could have been loaded up with the same thing.
Well, and you wouldn't have to disclose they were there. Although, if you're going to shoot them with a torpedo, you'd probably know.
I'm pretty sure if you got hit with four torpedo-shaped asteroids that had shield disruptors on there, you already know something's up.
Yeah.
Now, I thought they were going to, like, tractor beam a big asteroid to hit them or something like that, and they were going to, like, hide behind it. That would make more sense to me as if you were still trying to hide that you're there.
Well, But they're like,
oh, no.
You also don't want to destroy the ship. So.
True.
You want to bring down the shields, but you don't want to destroy the ship. There's too many things on there, including Lottie.
I don't know. Just wasn't a big fan. So they had to beam over those asteroids, shave them down so that they fit into the torpedo tubes.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a lot of work.
It seems like a lot of bother.
Could have just replicated a dummy torpedo.
There you go.
Without a photon head or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it just makes... It's what they decided. They want to do something different, which is fine. That's good. You want to mix it up. Whatever.
And very rarely do you have, like, 4 pages of explanation and then followed up with 3 pages of everything going exactly to plan. Usually it's 4 pages of explanation, and then the rest of it is how everything kind of...
goes sideways.
Went off course, right?
But then you still achieve your objectives anyway.
Exactly. Whereas here it was just like, okay, you told me the plan, you did the plan, and now everything's working.
Yeah.
So it seemed a little redundant.
Right. Yep, things went a little too well. Like the previous issue, this issue has a little display panel that's rather interesting too.
Which one?
On page 16, Sisko's accessing the ship's records. And a couple things are popping up, which, again, must be, you know, some of the booty they've got or for sale or whatever. And what do they have there? But my favorite phaser of all time, the TOS phaser rifle, which, again, 100 years later, a hand phaser probably has a lot more power than a TOS period phaser rifle. But I always love seeing it.
And then is that satellite thing Red Jack or whatever?
Oh,
whatever?
I'm pretty sure that's Nomad.
Nomad. Okay.
Right. That was from the TOS episode, The Changeling.
Okay, that's the one that erased everybody's minds and they had to relearn.
Erased Uhura's mind.
Uhura's, right.
And she had to learn all over again. And luckily that was done by the next episode.
Right.
Exactly. So ridiculous.
And then what about that other one, the little hand phaser looking thing?
Exactly. So that's a very interesting one. It looks a little familiar to me, but I don't know from where.
Yeah.
And I did try to do a search, but my search didn't give me what I wanted. I saw a lot of different Star Trek, you know, directed energy weapons, phaser weapons and disruptors and whatever, but not that particular one. So I'm not sure where it comes from, but I'm pretty sure we've seen it before.
Yeah.
And it reminded me a lot of the Space 1999 hand laser. Remember Space 1999?
Was it that one? I know you've talked about it. I've never seen an episode.
Okay. So the main point is the Space 1999 laser had a very interesting, unique shape to it. It really didn't look that much like a traditional pistol at all. And it's really snubby. Just like this one. And it's got 4 emitters that go down a line. And this one has what looks like 3 emitters. And it's very snubby. So that reminded me of the Space 1999 one.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, I don't know what this one is.
Yeah, but it's some alien race or something. Somebody was toting around that. I'm confident.
Exactly. No, it definitely looks like something that you would have seen.
Yeah, at some point during TOS. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not a TOS thing. I think it's more a TNG thing that we saw at some point along the way.
It would have been cool if they would have brought in like some like tech from Enterprise timeframe or something like that.
Wow, that would be even further back.
Exactly.
Which
makes it more valuable.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, I wish I knew what it was. Now it's going to bother me.
Yeah. So, whatever. It's cool. It's a great little Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
If you're that worried about it, I'm sure you'll find it with enough time spent.
Right. So, do you think Laddie's going to get caught in this fire?
No.
Right. I mean, he does get out of the cage, so he's not in the cage, but he's still kind of trapped and on fire almost.
So there's fire between Laddie and Kieran Dax. Is that it?
Right.
Right. Okay.
There's a lot of stuff's exploding. A lot of stuff's catching on fire. If there was any other animals in that room, they did. They all did. It does kind of remind me of the little in Guardians 3. There's a scene where there's a bunch of animals in little cages like this.
Yeah.
So that's where I was going when I saw it.
Yeah, I finally saw Guardians 3 a few days ago. And yes, good. I liked it. I thought it was good. It was long, but it was good. And all that backstory of Rocket was sad. But obviously, I mean, come on. Gunn was manipulating our heartstrings totally with that.
Yeah, of course.
Making them all look cute and all looking forward to being on the new planet. And, you know, it's like, nope! You're never going to go there! Your experiment's on the way to perfection, not perfection. Anyway. The high evolutionary, you bad guy. You.
He is a bad guy.
He is a bad guy. But man, Rocket did a number on his face, didn't he?
Yeah, seems like it.
Yeah. Okay, different franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so looking forward to seeing how this ends.
We'll have to wait because this just came out. So we have like a whole month to wait from time of recording.
That's fine. No big rush.
Well, do you have anything on this issue?
I got, well, nothing more than I said already.
Yeah.
I'm done.
All right. Well, then we'll close up shop, and next episode we will do Star Trek Ongoing and Star Trek Defiant, leading up to the Day of Blood crossover.
Oh, the Day of Blood.
So we're not quite to the crossover, but I think these are like the last issues before the crossover, so getting close.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on the review, and keep cool out there.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes. Or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.